Well, good morning to all of you. I don't know what sort of seas you've had to fly over to find yourself here in this place today, but I just want to say thank you for beating the wings, for making it here, for following whatever instinct God has put in your heart to come and be in this place of rest. And I'm hoping and praying that during this next little time together that you're going to find yourself encouraged, given some seeds of insight and delight that can help you in the journey that you'll be taking wherever it is that you may be going from this place. I have to tell you what a privilege it feels like for me to be here standing in front of all of you and in the midst of this incredible movement of love that is Horizon Community Church. I have come to be an admirer of your community and of your lead pastor, Chad Hovind. I'm so grateful that he extended the invitation for me to come, and I thought it was a daring act because he did it on a Sunday when he couldn't be physically present here to supervise me. And Chad, because I know you're watching in today, all I want to say is I will try not to mess it up. So I'm also incredibly indebted to my friend Keith Lindner. And Keith and Courtney have become friends for me as well, as we share the winter lands together sometimes down in Ocean Reef on Key Largo, Florida, where I'm spending many months of the year. I'm thrilled to have some local Cincinnati friends who are also Ocean Reef refugees, Bill Butler and Liz Coleman and a few others in the group. And it is just a delight to be here. Thank you for the privilege that it is to be in the circle with you. I want to also say that one of the things I've heard along the way as I was preparing for today was that this particular group, this service, was where all the coolest and best-looking people hung out. And I can see that's an understatement. I love that band that just let us. Can we just express our thanks to them again for one wonderful gift to us? And if you did wander in here today, maybe this is your first time taking a chance and settling down in this place. Be encouraged. Next week you'll have Chad or Drew back up here, and it'll be a much higher quality of communication, I promise you. So I've been tasked with reflecting with you today on animal instincts. This is the series that we're in right now. And it's a study over a course of several weeks on what it means to really learn from the way God has designed the creatures of this earth, that God has put into each one of these amazing beings special capacities and sensitivities, instincts is the word we're choosing, that can enable them to achieve the greatest possible kind of life for themselves. And I believe that part of the reason why animals' kingdom has been given to human beings as companions on the journey is because we stand so much to learn, actually, from them about some of the principles and practices that can lead to a greater kind of life for ourselves as well. And I want to say that one of the greatest values to studying the life of the creatures that God has made is that embedded in a lot of them is a certain kind of wisdom that can bless us if we can take it in for ourselves. And now I say that word wisdom. It's a word that's used often in these days. I wonder what you think of when you hear that word wisdom, how you would go about trying to explain the word wisdom to a younger person, perhaps. I want to suggest to you a simple definition of the term today, that wisdom is the capacity to see things as they really are, to understand how things happen or work, and to know what to do in response to those circumstances. Think about that definition with me for a moment. It's the capacity to see things as they really are and to understand how they got to be that way, how things are happening and how they're working, and what to do in response to those particular conditions. And if that's a too complicated kind of definition, I'll throw out one even more succinct one supplied by the great German scholar Gerhard von Rad, who says that wisdom is becoming competent with regard to the realities of life. Think about the role that you play in instructing children or grandchildren or younger siblings, or that they played perhaps somebody older in with respect to you. How much of what it is that we're about in these relationships is really aimed at trying to help one another understand the realities of life, that we might grow competent in dealing with those realities? Today, I want to try and think with you about some of those realities by unpacking a very short passage from the Bible that comes to us from the book of Proverbs. And this is a place where the Bible instructs us, using the example of animals in the world, on some of the fundamental orientations that lead to living a wise life. In fact, the entire book of Proverbs, in a sense, is God's little instruction book, somebody's called it. It's God's tweets, or X's, in a sense, now, as God communicates simple, practical ideas that, when lived out, can translate into a better kind of life. And the Proverbs, the book of Proverbs, was often used by older people to teach their children, as well as they could, how to make the best of the journey of life. And as I look at this text with you today, I want to acknowledge my debt to Professor Haddon Robinson for a very helpful insight on this particular text that comes to us from Proverbs chapter 30 and verse 24. Listen to these words, if you would. The writer says, "Four things on earth are small, yet they are extremely wise." They're very small, but they're extremely wise. And I want to stop right there and just observe that there's a certain kind of countercultural quality to even that simple statement, if you think about it. Why is that? I suggest it is because the world today is usually fascinated and focused on everything big. Big is all the rage today, from the great big bill to all of these gigantic, large, vertically integrated companies in business, to huge data sets in scientific research, to massive open online courses that are taking over education, to giant buildings, to summer blockbuster movies. Almost everybody today has their eyes looking up at the behemoth-sized phenomenon and entities in the world today. I think in our own family recently that even this passion has sort of taken hold of my wife and me. We've just adopted a puppy. The puppy is 4 months old. Her name is Glory. And she's an Irish wolfhound, which means 4 months into the journey, she's already 50 pounds. And she is on her way. I can hear her grow. She's on her way up. She's going to be the size of a pony in just a few months' time. I could have ridden her all the way here already and saved on the airfare. She's just so big. And so much of our life today is about a focus on the big and the brash and the bold. This is the trending theme everywhere. God, however, says that sometimes that the wisdom that we need to make the very most of life is found by looking down and studying very small things. Consider the ant, Proverbs starts out by saying. Ants are creatures of little strength, the writer puts it. They're among the tiniest beings on earth. They are so squashable. They are so vulnerable. We've got an ant problem in our kitchen back home right now, these tiny little ants, yet they have at least one attribute, the writer says, that we ought to go to school on. They store up their food in the summer. When it's summertime, ants work incredibly hard. And as I said, I'm seeing them on my kitchen counters right now as they're trying to work. They barely sleep. They are constantly on the move in life. Why is this? Because, I'm going to suggest to you, God has implanted into ants the capacity to see things as they really are. And they know that now in the summer is the time for storing up. because food is plentiful in the summertime. And they understand how things work. They somehow have built in these instincts to grasp that food is there right now, but when the winter season comes, they're going to only have what they manage to store up in this particular period of time. And so they do the right thing in response to those conditions. They see how things really are, and they know what to do in response to those conditions. And they collect lots of food, and they fill up their storehouses with it. Now contrast the ant with the proverbial grasshopper. Any of you remember hearing the story of the ant and the grasshopper when you were a kid? The grasshopper is a very different kind of creature. It doesn't have those kinds of instincts. The grasshopper spends the summer fiddling around and then wonders why, when the winter comes, he is so hungry. Why won't others feed him, is the complaint of the grasshopper in one of the fables that Aesop tells. The Bible has a word for a creature like this. It uses this word on 64 separate occasions. 41 times it gets used in the book of Proverbs alone, and the word is fool. The grasshopper is a fool. A fool can be a very nice and entertaining creature. A fool can actually be quite well-educated and bright creature, but a fool, by definition, doesn't see things as they really are. Doesn't seem to understand how things really work. And therefore does not do the right things at the right time in response to the conditions of life. A fool is somebody that repeats their mistakes, who fails to learn from life's experiences, who tends to blame their problems on outside circumstances or depend on other people to bail them out. Do you know people like that? Have you worked with people like that? Have you sometimes been a person like that? So the book of Proverbs, in an earlier chapter, says this, and I want to read it for you if I can from Proverbs chapter 6. Go to the ant, which is a way of saying, learn from the ant, you sluggard. Consider its ways and be wise. It has no commander, no overseer or ruler, yet it stores its provisions in summer. Otherwise, it doesn't have to be browbeaten to do it. It has an instinct. It's got an inner know-how to store its provisions in summer and to gather its food at the harvest. And then the writer goes on and says, speaking to the grasshoppers, I guess, how long will you lie in there, you sluggard? When will you get up from your sleep? A little bit of sleep, a little bit of slumber, a little folding of the hands to rest. Keep doing these things, and poverty will come on you like a thief, and scarcity upon you like an armed man. The big lesson, don't be a grasshopper. The big lesson we want to teach our children, don't be a grasshopper. Be an ant, because the ant knows what season it's in. The question I have for you amongst a few today is, do you know what season you're in? Have you looked around you, studied the details of life enough to appreciate the conditions? Do you appreciate what's possible now that may not be possible later? Am I doing with my family, with my friends, with my finances, with my physical or spiritual health, what I might not be able to do later on? You know, what are the deep shared experiences I ought to be trying to create for my family? What are the learning adventures I ought to be going on now or encouraging the people I like and love to go on now? What are the great truths of life? What are the generous contributions? What are the generous treasures on earth, the real treasures on earth, that I ought to be storing up in this particular time or The treasure's in heaven. Because here's a wise word for all of us. If you ever, any of you raise your hand if you've ever been a fan of Game of Thrones. Everybody who's ever watched that show knows this phrase. Winter is coming. Right? Winter is coming. The time to do in the sun, all that's possible to do in the sun, is for all of us running out. And it's time now to take advantage, to seize the day, to do the things which we can do now. I know that there was a professor at USC for many years by the name of Leo Buscaglia, who used to give his students an assignment every single year to answer a question in the form of a simple essay. And the question was, what would you do if you find out you only had 5 days left to live? And the students would go home and they would sit down and they'd furrow their brow and they'd begin writing and then they'd come up with some of the kind of predictable answers. Well, I'd tear up this assignment and I'd go out and get drunk. Or I'd leave this behind and I'd run off to Hawaii with my girlfriend or boyfriend. Or I'd finally cash it in and buy those luxury things that I wanted. You hear these kinds of statements. But what most students did was also list other kinds of things. You know, I would say I'm sorry to that person that I've hurt. I would seek to repair that relationship with that old friend that I've lost touch with. I would thank my parents for all that they've done for me. I would find a way to find some under-resourced person and I would help give them a hand up in life. I'd write a thank you note to that teacher that had such an influence on me along the way. And the list goes on and on. I'd love, I'd give, I'd grow, I'd serve, on and on like this. And Buscaglia would collect all these assignments and he never bothered grading them. He just took his red pen, and on top of every one of the sheets, he would write out, "Why don't you do these things now? Why don't we? Before the winter comes." My sister didn't know last June that the winter was coming. She was living her life as if it wasn't. She got up that night in the middle of the night and went to the kitchen to get a drink of water, somehow slipped and fell, never realizing that was the night in which she'd experienced the head injury that would result in her death 6 weeks later. My brother, 2 years ago, was at the top of his game, a federal district court judge, a brilliant athlete, an amazing man of influence. He could not see that for him, winter was coming and would come and close out his life on this earth in January of this past year. It's important that we take a lesson from the wisdom of the ant. They know what season they're in. They make the most of their time doing all the good they can possibly do before winter. What would you do if you knew you have only 5 days before the snow falls? Or learn from the wisdom of the hyrax. The writer of Proverbs goes on to say in verse 26, "Hyraxes are creatures of little power, yet they make their home in the crags." Now, I will confess that when I first read that verse, it stumped me, largely because I had no blooming idea what a hyrax was. It sounds like a creature in a Dr. Seuss book or in a Harry Potter novel. But I did a little bit of research and digging, and I found out that in the ancient world, the word hyrax meant rock badger. Hyraxes are these pint-sized prairie dog creatures whose grayish coat helps them blend in very well with the rocky hills that are their natural habitat. And blending is an especially good thing for a hyrax because another word for hyrax in the dialect of wolves, coyotes, and lions is tasty. Very tasty. And so every mature hyrax has figured out this one thing. If I want to remain secure, I need to stay close to the rock. No matter how muscular, speedy, experienced I am, I'm a fool if I wander too far away from the rock. So here's the takeaway. Ants know what season they're in. Hyraxes know where their security is found. Do you know where your security is found? Do you have an ultimate plan for your security? Sooner or later, everybody gets the reality that no matter how fast they run, how muscular they are, how gifted they are, they can't outrun death itself. They will not be able to save themselves by climbing to the moral mountaintop. But the wise ones know that though they have little power, there is a place they can make their home where they will be secure. And many years ago, before any of us were born, some wise person wrote the words of what became a very popular hymn or song of the day that went like this: Rock of ages, cleft for me, let me hide myself in thee. Let the water and the blood from thy riven side which flowed be of sin the double cure. Cleanse me from its guilt and power. And I just want to invite you that if you've never ever done it before, maybe you might say to God in the quiet of your own heart, God, I'm coming home to you. I'm following the instinct, the homing instinct you've given me. I'm coming home to you, Father. I'm laying myself down in the cleft of the rock. Thank you, Jesus, that in you and with you and because of you, I can always be secure. Ants know what season they're in. Hyraxes know where their security is going to be found. But what about the third small creature in this list? Verse 27 reads, and I quote, "Locusts have no king, yet they advance together in ranks." Now, it's a fascinating observation if you really think about it, because a locust is not a particularly formidable creature on its own. In fact, you can pin one down. They're not even quick. You can pin one down. You can pull their wings off if you're a fourth grader with too much time on their hands, right? Locusts are not powerful on their own. A single locust, actually, is quite vulnerable. But when locusts advance together in ranks as one army, they can form a force that is simply unstoppable. The desert locust, which is found in the Middle East and in Africa, and was probably the subject that is being talked about in this text, that locust has been known to form a swarm up to 460 square miles in size and to travel in formation up to 8,000 miles. When it descends to feed, the swarm can pack up to 80 million locusts into less than half a square mile, consuming absolutely every plant in its path. I have seen a swarm of teenagers do that to a snack cabinet, and it's not pretty, it's fearsome. And as Proverbs tells us here, locusts don't have a king to organize them. They don't have an outside force pressing on them, but by instinct. Locusts know the power of community. The power of community. And working together, they can overrun and conquer kingdoms. And they have. I'm told of a man who was once visiting an asylum for the criminally insane. And he was shocked to discover that there were only three guards overseeing something like 100 plus inmates. And so the guy goes up to one of the guards and he says, "Aren't you afraid that the inmates will unite and overcome you and escape?" "Not at all," said the guard. "Not at all. Lunatics never unite." Looking at the political world today, we might debate it. But here's the truth. Locusts very purposely unite. And I want to just say that the transferable wisdom, I think, for us is that we are wise to purposefully unite. Because being bound together regularly with other people that are on a purposeful path in life, trying to make the most of life, trying to find the best inspiration that there is for life, coming together in a place like you've come together today shows such wisdom. And if you've not found for yourself a smaller community, a group where you can grow, or a team where you can use your gifts to serve, then take advantage of the wonderful invitations that will be extended to you so often in the life of this place, and you will be amazed at the power and the joy that comes from that kind of community. If we think we can stand up to the forces of this world or influence this world substantially, acting all by ourselves, we might not really have the good sense of a bug. So there's a lot that we can learn from these small wonders that God has made. Ants know what season they're in. Hyraxes know where the security is found. Locusts get the power of community. And finally, the text says, a lizard can be caught with the hand, yet it is found in the palaces of kings. Have you ever caught a lizard in your hand? When I was a little boy, our family regularly vacationed in Bermuda, and the lizards were all over the place, and I would chase after those lizards all the time in order to grab them with my hands. And the truth is that cute gecko from Geico aside, most lizards are actually pretty creepy creatures. They've got these bulbous eyes and sticky fingers and scaly or slimy bodies. They move in this herky-jerky way that makes you want them out of my hand. As soon as you take them in your hand, down in Key Largo, where I'm spending part of my time now, people are actually applauded for using pellet guns to take out the larger lizards, the iguanas. I've been on the golf course where very, very big lizards have shown up, and I just leave them the golf ball. And yet the Bible tells us that the lizard is found in the palace of the king. As unattractive as it is, it's found in the palace of the king. And I think there's a theological word for this kind of incongruity. And the word is grace. It's grace. It's unmerited favor. Lizards experience in so many ways the gift of grace. Ugly and awkward as they are, they get to walk in the halls of majesty and scamper around the throne. And I think this is such an incredibly powerful image because I think in the deepest way, this is true of you and true of me, too. A lot of us aren't all that much to look at. I looked at my publicity picture that you were showing on the screen. I thought, that's from 10 years ago. I'm a lot more lizardly now than I was in those days, right? On the outside or the inside, all of us have got our lizard-like aspects. And if we don't know that ourselves, just give a little nudge to the person next to you. They probably could tell you about that. But the amazing grace is that when we put our faith in Jesus, we are forgiven of all that. We are embraced in spite of all that. We're not only allowed entrance into the king's palace. We are welcomed there by the God who absolutely delights in his creatures. And one day, God is going to transform the us into beings that are so beautiful that those who see us will be tempted to fall down in adoration. Maybe you have read at some point in your life one of the Narnia Chronicles or seen one of the movies. You may know the name C.S. Lewis, who is the author behind those incredible stories. And one of the things Lewis says in one of his most famous essays, one called The Weight of Glory, is stuck in my mind, and I want to share it with you. He says, there are no ordinary people. There are no ordinary people. You have never talked to a mere mortal. Nations, cultures, arts, civilization, oh, these are mortal, and their life to ours is like the life of a gnat. But it is immortals with whom we joke, the ones that we marry. It's immortals that we snub or exploit, people on the way to becoming immortal horrors or everlasting splendors. It's a serious thing, says Lewis, to live in a society of eternal beings and to remember that the very dullest and most uninteresting person that you talk to one day might be a creature which, if you saw it now in its true state, you would be strongly tempted to worship, or else a horror and a corruption such as you only meet in a nightmare. And all day long, we are in some degree helping each other to one or another of those destinations, to become more lizard-like or to become more transformed. And it's in the light of these overwhelming possibilities, says Lewis, it's with the awe and the circumspection proper to them that we should conduct all of our dealings with one another, all of our friendships, our loves, our plays, and our politics. Our charity for each other must be a real and a costly love with deep feeling for the sins in spite of which we love the sinner. For next to the blessed sacrament itself, your neighbor, that person sitting next to you, that lizardly person at work, next to the blessed sacrament itself, says Lewis, that neighbor is the holiest object being presented to your senses. As we close our service out today, I want to invite you to join me in making a personal commitment to seek to live out just a little bit more the lessons of these small creatures, these small wonders. Like the ant, decide before you leave this place today that you will seek to do what this season commends, because you understand that winter's coming, that winter is on its way. And like the hyrax, I invite you to ground your security in God. He is strong enough for anything that you'll face in this life. He's your rock. Like the locust, resolve to do your life in community if you're not doing it that way now. Make a commitment. I'm not going it alone. I'm going to find people to do life with me. And like the lizard, take joy that there is an amazing grace that surrounds your life, and that grace is not just a principle or a force, but a king who loves you with all your heart and all of his. These aren't just good ideas. Living this way is the way of wisdom. Would you bow your head with me and let's just pray together for a moment. Lord, thank you for the world that you have made that is so bursting with opportunities for inspiration and for insight. We just pray, God, that you will move us to practice what you teach us through the small wonders you've created and to bring forth from them a good that is large indeed. And don't just help us, Lord, to take hold of these things for ourselves. Lord, would you just enable us to understand these great principles and to apply them that we might teach the next generation, that we might teach our children and their children very, very well how to find life in all of its fullness. For we pray in your loving name. Amen.